Welcome, everybody, to Capes and Scowls West.
West.
This is our December 21st reviews issue, and we got a couple hits for you today. We're going to be talking about Goddess Mode, number one, Klaus and the Crying Snowman, number one. And Nat, why don't you take it away with our first one?
I'll be leading us with Batman Damned Book 2, written by Brian Azzarello, with art by Lee Bermejo. This is a continuation of Batman's penis. I mean, Batman Damned.
It's really big.
Yeah, the Batwang, it takes three issues to get. This is the continuation of Batman Damned, which was a spectacular first issue, despite the controversy.
The glaring shadow of something else.
It was overshadowed by something.
It was so large it cast this shadow amongst all of DC Comics for a month.
Oh, God.
So this deals a little bit more with advancing the story and showing Bruce Wayne's really screwed up childhood in this world.
Oh my God.
There's a lot of really, the artwork in this is incredible. The choice that they made with Etrigan to make him like a spoken word rapper and like people following him and listening to his words and the exalted one, you know, like it's really odd, and he's definitely still in the world of magic based on what happens later in the issue. I liked this a lot. I actually liked it for the more comic booky moments, the actual fight sequence that we get in this, where we get to see Batman throw batarangs, which is always like a weird hallmark for me. Is like I want to see batarangs thrown, and I want to see them sticking into people. And I get this in this.
Objects.
Yeah, I get it. Somebody gets stuck in the eye and the shoulder, I think, and I like that a lot. We get to see the grappling hook. We get the new suit in action, the chainmail underplate. I like this a lot. I think this was. It's very much a continuation. The first issue was so good at setting up this world that we're really just living in it. I'm just not sure that the world is real.
I don't know what the hell is like. I read this and I'm like, all right, what's real? It's like Blade Runner 2049 again. I'm like, what's real? Is this okay?
Right.
Is this happening? I do have some questions, though. So, of course, spoiler alert in all reviews episodes. At the very end... You find out that Harley Quinn is terrorizing everyone, and at some point she actually, which horrifies me because it's like the really like creepy old kind of syringes.
Oh yeah.
That she like basically drops into his neck, and it's a drug concoction, I'm assuming. Number one, is she going to rape him? I'm not super sure because, you know, at one point he's like, I'm Batman, drugs don't affect me. So, of course, he wakes up. The other portion of it is I remember looking at this, I'm like, why does she have the scars of, like, she was in a,
an autopsy scar?
Yeah.
Harley Quinn doesn't normally creep me out, but this one severely creeped me out, and I might actually have nightmares.
Yeah. I'm a little upset that they chose for the main cover to have Harley Quinn as the face, because...
That kind of ruins
that,
this.
That reveal would have been so much more interesting.
I didn't actually know that it was Harley Quinn. I kind of thought it was a random person.
I didn't either.
Gotcha.
It wasn't until after they revealed that I looked further down and it had the red in the
Yeah, I saw the staging for Joker, and I'm like, okay, so it's just Harley in Joker's jacket. Okay, makes sense.
See, and I didn't catch that until... I didn't actually realize that until...
Okay, well,
because Nat's just got such great, you know, artistic eye, and the rest of us are like, la, words!
And so much prior, knowledge in the characters. I do like her makeup in this, though. I think it's really cool.
The fuck out of me.
the broken teeth smile is pretty interesting.
As well.
Are we led to believe that he's killing her? This was definitely a callback to Killing Joke, where he's strangling Joker in the rain, and then you see the reflections.
Right.
Which is also really cool. Oh, shit!
Did you not see the thing on the bottom?
Oh, shit. No, I didn't get that.
Oh, you didn't see Enchantress coming up out of the puddle?
And she's his hands.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a lot of questions still. I don't know that the third book can wrap all of this up really nicely.
Yeah, well, oh my gosh. I took a lot out of this book. I feel like Azzarello, just came up to and was like, just want to try literally the most nightmarish version of Batman possible. And I don't mean that as in, like, scary or terrifying. Mm-hmm. Like, this book reads like a dream, like, sequence. Like, and that's why I think, like, asking a lot of the questions, like, is this real? What's actually real? What's happening? Like, that sort of lends itself to it.
Mm-hmm.
And also, there's this really awesome idea of, like, this sort of duality in it, and where everyone sort of has a, like, Batman and the Enchantress are kind of like a dual, like, foils for each other in this, and Constantine has his, like, ghost.
Oh, or it's, whatever.
And the, so, like, the dead man. Dead man following Constantine around.
Not only is there this huge thing with duality, but, like, people's opposites are ghosts in it. And, like, then, and Batman also, you see when Harley puts the Joker smile on the Batman symbol, it's another duality right there. Then you get Harley wearing Joker's jacket, and she has the autopsy scar, so she might be dead. There's, like, so many things about, like,
fucking autopsy about, like, scars.
Yeah, just, like, the duality of people and that, your other that entire half is, like, a,
end
is a,
scene that they, what is like, it? That entire portion of it after she drugs him. I have, like, I've been uncomfortable when reading comics sometimes, but I think this is the most uncomfortable I've ever been just watching that. I'm like, this is...
Yeah.
I mean, the worst part is she's like, keep hitting me, I can't live without him, and I'm like, I'm dead.
Yeah, yeah. That was, I mean, this book is dark.
Yeah.
Oh my god, yes.
And that whole part with hitting him with, like, the drug that paralyzes it, that's like a classic nightmare trope, is, you know, yeah. You can't move and you can't scream, you know?
Well,
you
that,
can't
was, do that was all why that I was stuff, curious, because, yeah. Like, she, like, unzips, and I'm like, is she gonna rape him? Am I, what the fuck?
Yeah, it's, and that's, like, that's a really, like, that's a dark direction to go.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's, and also, like, a reflection of her relationship to the Joker, as you just said, like, I need him. It's like, oh, God. Are you turning to Batman to fill that void now? Like, that's fucked up.
That's, I mean, that's what he did, so are you trying to... I'm dead on the inside?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I don't know. I actually thought the part where she was, like, keep hitting me, I, like, don't want to live without him. I actually thought that that was, like, totally part of her plan to, like, throw him off guard, because he does pause and, like, he's like, what do I say? You know, yeah. What do I do here? And in that time, she's like, oh, yeah. By the way, stab.
I honestly don't know. A lot of this was, yeah, that was, I could not end with this, basically. I'm like, you need to read something else. The world is not a black and dark place. You should, I mean, the other portion of it is, too, is you have to look at the fact that you see the other parts of it. Like, you see Bruce himself as a kid dressed up as a cowboy. And that doesn't mean anything, but he literally points that gun at the back of his mom's head. And I was like, what the fuck?
Points the gun and fires.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, it's a cap gun, so.
Yeah.
I was just like, what? What universe is this where you're, oh my god, I'm pretty sure none of the universes that I know of his childhood. Oh, yeah.
they definitely, like, they closed that idea that Bruce had this wonderful childhood before his parents' death, and this is very much like, no, shit was screwed up. Like, this was a kid who had issues before the big one.
I also kind of just realized this because we were talking about Harley wanting to feel pain, but Deadman, while he's inside this body too, he is being burned alive. He says also, yeah, pain, fuck yes, pain, like, yeah. I love it. So there's that kind of,
that's like the normal trope, like, pain is how you know you're alive.
Yeah,
and he's dead, so
yeah. Or dreaming, you know, you can't feel pain in a dream.
God only knows anymore. I don't know what this is. Like, I do and I don't at the same time, and I'm like, what the fuck's gonna happen in three?
My only criticism about this book is that if you're a writer and you're not very well versed in hip hop, you should not try to write rap, because it comes off as, like, somebody who is not a rapper trying to write rap.
Well, the other portion of that is kind of, because Nat mentioned it before, Jason Blood, he always, like, Etrigan rhymes.
Yes.
So I'm wondering if that's why it's clunky, because even when Etrigan rhymes in anything ever, it's always very clunky and, like,
yeah.
It's weird.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to be, but it's still not. You're just kind of like, eh.
Yeah. And see, I wasn't familiar with that character. I honestly thought he was just kind of a one-off for this. So no. I was like, why is he, like...
Yeah.
Well, when he said blood, I didn't really think it through.
Yeah.
You said Jason Blood.
Yeah, like, I thought it was...
Etrigan.
I thought they were doing a Brother Blood thing, and then I was like, J Blood? That doesn't make sense. And then it was J-Blood. Like Etrigan. I was like, oh, yeah, okay, so Jason Blood, duh.
Oh,
yeah. So.
Yeah. No,
it was even just... even Etrigan's raps are very... raps. His rhymes are very clunky, and, like, it's supposed to put him in his time period of way the hell back that way.
I mean, it's fine for his character, but if you're gonna redo his character, then you should, like, go with it.
I thought it was an inside joke. Yeah.
That it was, like, you know.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Once again, not being familiar with this character, that was the only thing that, like, threw me off about it, because...
No, it stopped me in my tracks, too, and it wasn't until Nat said Etrigan, I was like, oh, yeah.
Because he looks, he has the whole, you know, like gangster rapper look, and then I'm just like, this is not how gangster rappers rap.
It's amazing what they did with the silhouette, and I have to talk about this, because when I first saw the character before reading it, I was like, oh, is this Etrigan? That was my first reaction, because the way that they did his earrings, they give him the look of the fins on his face.
Oh.
And then they have facial piercings where it's the horns.
Yep.
So he's literally like, they're doing the silhouette of Etrigan, but not actually making him a demon itself. And he's also wearing a pentagram necklace.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so he's like a demon.
Yeah, the gone form of man, rise the demon Etrigan.
Oh.
They actually call him Etrigan one point in time in the story.
I think they did.
Yeah.
Good book. Yeah. I mean, it's, yeah.
I'm really interested to see. I hope he just wakes up at the end.
Oh, I don't know that I want to be, like, yeah.
I'm kidding. That's a terrible ending and such a overdone cliche.
Right. In the back of my mind, I'm like, is this going to be another Nightwing one where we're just like.
Yeah, we get to the end, we're like, rock, rock. All right. Well, Patrick, you want to take us off the next one now?
Cool, yeah. So, I mentioned this briefly in our previous episode, 37. And what we got here is Goddess Mode number 1 out of Vertigo Comics, by written by Zoe Quinn with art by Robbie Rodriguez.
Woo-hoo.
So this is a candy-coated cyberpunk tour de force, in my opinion, opening up this futuristic world in which this one corporation sort of owns everything, and we have nanotech and, you know, access through your eyeballs to the internet.
Literally my fucking nightmare.
Why is that, Kat?
I have this fun, nifty thing that I, until I recently realized it, I usually drift toward technology being inherently bad just because of humans. So, this basically was like, here, this is what your future could look like, and I don't want to be in that future, thank you!
Yeah, well, and it's super interesting, too. I mean, like, I'm kind of the opposite way about technology. This is a different turn, because this is basically using technology to, like, as a late, like, neoliberal, like, capitalist tool. And, you know, like, the company pollutes the air so much that they have to have nanodes in their, buy nanodes from the company to then, like, purify the air that they breathe. Like, all the raw water signs advertisements, too. That was really funny.
I like the fact that, like, they feed into your brain a better version of what you have. So, like, if you're living in the slums, your apartment actually looks better than it actually is.
Yes.
So, and it's like it's constantly being filtered, and you're constantly, like, buying the space of your visual feed, you know, like that idea.
See, this is, like, literally all of the stuff that just it makes me twitchy and makes me uncomfortable.
But isn't that the point? Like, isn't that a good thing for the story, is the fact that it is all of that stuff, because it lets you know that don't trust the world that we're in? Like, it's...
I've only been saying that for a long time.
Well, and I mean,
see it with Facebook.
Well, within the world that we're in the story as well. I mean, you definitely you can relate this to our current situation. I got confused reading this because of the opening sequence being within. I'm going to call the other AI world the Goddess Mode.
Okay.
So when they're in the Goddess Mode in the first few pages, I thought we were being shown the lead character.
Yep.
Yes.
But I think we're being shown the lead villain. Like, whoever this woman is in the Goddess Mode, who challenges her right away and basically, like, pummels her.
Oh, yeah.
So...
Yeah. I think it might be, like, the AI that they talk about.
Like, this is the actual core of the AI itself, is her.
Yeah, something like... Or that would be, like, her manifestation.
Right.
Oh, yeah, just, like briefly, when she does go into Goddess Mode, and, like, the artwork in that is just incredible.
Yeah, it's definitely Robbie Rodriguez getting to cut loose. Which I think he does, like, the cyberpunk future world very well anyway. Like, I think it's really, it's engaging. It's bright in when it needs to be. You know, it's not the complete gray version of cyberpunk. Mm-hmm. There's, like, the neon is definitely part of it.
Yeah. If you want to activate your powers, just do a cool pose and shout out a cool phrase, and the rest of it kind of happens. Magic is kind of dumb. Ka-chow.
Yeah. That's interesting, too, that they refer to it several times throughout the comic as magic. They refer to, like, the technology as magic, which is interesting because that's Arthur C. Clarke's third law of technology is technology is sufficiently advanced are indistinguishable from magic.
We're going to bring up that phrase, aren't we? Because I know it's coming.
Which is, I mean, boy, did I like this book, but there's a lot of, I'm not quite sure why. It's like all of it came together as, it felt like all of it was a whole. It's one cohesive idea, art and writing. And the art's incredible. Like, this is a beautiful comic book. But I think this is one of those that's going to take multiple readings. I actually read, like, the first 10 pages and then had to stop and reread. Yeah. Because I was like, okay, I'm not getting this. I need to, like, be in the zone when reading this book.
Oh, you have to. Because even, I had to do the same thing. It was awful.
She gives almost all the exposition, like, right there in the beginning, like, the first four pages. Yeah. That almost pulled me out of it, because it was, like, pretty explainy, like, to, like, straight to the audience.
Well, I hate being that person, but when I, like, open up a comic book and I literally see more dialogue and I feel like I'm seeing, like, pictures, I'm like, shit.
Oh, what, you don't like the words? Cat one picture, not one.
Exactly. Well, and it's funny, too, because the narration the narration is by our lead character, but all of the visuals are someone else. And
it's so fucking... It's like... the best way I could... It's like Ken Fuckery. I'm like, what? Why?
Yeah.
It's not bad. It's just a lot. And if you're trying to half... Number one, you can't half focus with this comic. Like,
no.
Period. No. And the other portion of it is it's like, here, think about your future, and this is what it could look like. And I'm like, nope.
It's funny, I never have those reflections until after the fact. Like, that's one of those things for me while reading something. I don't know that I always put the real world into it, so I didn't see this as our future. It all is just a fantasy, you know?
Oh, I absolutely project every story onto our current times and see how they line up, because no story is ever written in a void.
Yeah.
Well, another portion of it is, too, is just because of my own, like, I have a very, technology is what it is, and I understand what I sign up for when I am attached to it. The thing that worries me is the further technology gets along, and this makes it easier. I'm like, okay, but what can you do with that? People are like, you're negative. I'm like, you're goddamn right I am.
So, are you reading a second issue?
I don't know, because I don't know if I want to think about if I want to go down Orwell Lane.
Oh, I'm definitely reading a second issue of this. This is awesome. I love this. Is right down my alley in most ways.
Yeah, cyberpunk is my like favorite subgenre of storytelling. So yeah, totally. Yep. Totally.
All the punks. Cyberpunk. Oh, no, like I said, it's not because I
don't
punk.
By any means that I don't like it. Like I said, I just don't want to go down Orwell Lane because it'll just be a month of
That's what.
Rocking in the corner.
That's why you read our next book, right? After you read that?
Exactly.
Big metadata is watching.
All right, so now for Merry fucking Christmas.
That's the best way to introduce this book.
So we've got Klaus, Klaus, and the Crying Snowman. We've got written by Grant Morrison and illustrated by Dan Moore. Yes. Honestly, I just want to ask questions to Grant Morrison of when do you write this? Because I want to know when you have the time to think about this.
Yeah, like, how do you go from, oh, you know what, Ragnarok was a story about aliens that invaded, and then it's going to take Santa to figure that out.
And like, then, it's not even that. Santa to, like, burn his hands off and save the world.
Yeah. And age himself.
And age himself.
Because, you know, he travels through time to save the world.
Grant Morrison's always a damn drug trip every single time you read his stuff. And I'm like, ugh. It's not bad, but I'm just like, ugh, dude.
Well, and who the Crying Snowman was.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there's, like, I loved this book. I look forward to the holiday season now for the past couple of years because I know we're going to get a Klaus. We're going to get a Klaus one-shot, and it's going to be a blast, and it's going to be a huh? And, you know, there's going to be so many elements that tie into all of the Santa Claus mythology. You know, we even get a Krampus-type thing in this with the goat man.
That's true.
You know, it's...
Well, not even that. You get... What the hell was it? I forgot what I said. This is literally Klaus, And yeah, you have the crying snowman, but it's claws and the graves of Valhalla and how they.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, you even got like some Norse mythology thrown in there, and I'm just like, what?
Yeah, yep, yep. And there's also like they say something about the council is on the moon or on Mars or something, right?
Yeah, like, there's a council of Santa Clauses or something like that. And I'm just like, what is this book? Can you just. The wish I ask, like, the Christmas wish I have for every year anymore is, like, hey, just do 4 issues in the month of December for Claus, and I will buy every single one of them. If you did 2, I probably would. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
But, I mean, shout out to Dan Mora, because his art is always...
Oh, yeah, this is...
freaking amazing.
This is the best looking book that I read this week.
Yeah, you have this this. I don't know what this splash page was, but it was
that's awesome. Ragnarok is what it is. I mean, that's insane.
That's my point, though. It's like, excuse me while I rip the mouth off this wolf. This giant wolf that I'm sitting my feet in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Patrick's turn.
Yeah.
You know what? I really like Grant Morrison's writing for how ridiculous it is at the same time as it's intricately detailed. But I also hate it because of that. His writing really loses me a lot. Like, I love it, and I'm like, and I'm just like, I study him more. I study his writing more than I enjoy it, is what I would say. Like,
that is a fair statement.
From a writing perspective. I have no idea what's happening in this story. I have very little, like, connection because of how much stuff is thrown at you in like such a short amount of time that also all makes sense, and I'm just like, god damn it makes sense, like.
Yeah,
but
like you're upset at him because you're like, it's so complicated, and then you're also just so happy with him, you're like, you're so complicated, but it all makes sense.
I know, right? I'm just like, oh god, all these details are so cool, and like that's so imaginative and creative that you're able to put all these together, but oh my god, there's so many like small details in this that like, why can't like.
Yeah.
Like that, yeah. So.
Well,
I don't know. I can't really read his writing as so much as just like analyze it. So
Patrick's
I don't think I really.
Is in his bedroom and there's red yarn everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not like, yeah, I wouldn't say I like Grant Morrison's books, but I really like Grant Morrison's writing. makes sense.
He's definitely my favorite writer in comics, just in general.
Well, yeah,
I can totally see that. Like, I kind of realized that reading this, because you always say how he's your favorite, and I was like, the one thing that Grant Morrison does more than any other writer is write the most outrageously insane things for the artist to design.
That's such a valid point.
Like, I feel
not
like
wrong.
I feel like he writes specifically to make the coolest pages possible.
Yeah.
And which is, you know, what you should be doing in comics, because then you get like all these ridiculous, incredible
has like
pages.
The, and
you
he
know?
Does this a lot with just comics in general. And he's the one who somehow pulls the thing in the 60s that made absolutely no sense to somehow make sense all the way over here in 2010.
I think that's like...
Once again, intricate complex.
Well, and I think that's the reason that everything is so intricate is because he's trying to reconcile all aspects of the story himself. So, like, Claus is the exploration of Santa mythology throughout all cultures. So that's why there's a council of Santas, is because like each culture has a different viewpoint on what Santa is. So ostensibly you have a story about like the super heroic Santa Claus, but that's just the American Santa. You know, like we're not talking about the other countries, and then you see the blips of that, or like Jack Frost is actually a Santa Claus character and not just Jack Frost, and there's all of these different pieces. Like, there's a dwarf Santa in this.
Yeah.
whose buddy is the goat that is,
and
like,
Krampus.
The wisest person in the story.
And then you have Krampus show up a little bit in it, too. You're just like,
Oh, and then we didn't even talk about the snowman himself. Like, the snowman is our through line in the story, because
that's
the snowman's
true.
A human.
It's true.
Mm-hmm.
And we, you know, in the beginning,
it's like,
we
I know
see...
who's naughty or nice, I'm like, you...
Well, and the first version of Santa that we see is the older version with his hair going white.
I didn't think about
the rest of the book, he doesn't look that way because he has to use the, like, the Kronos thing to turn time back so that he can fix the errors and stop the invasion from happening. Yeah, like, how is a fantasy version of Santa Claus, who is the superheroic character, end up being, like, the biggest sci-fi epic in 40 pages of comic book?
He's like, I question not his creative process, but he's like, huh, all right, well, I've got a little bit of downtime. I guess I should have paused.
how do you get there from that storytelling? Yeah, this was
pretty much.
I look forward to every one of these. I believe I own all of Claws. I might be missing one of the shorts because I had given it away to somebody to be like, you need to read this. So
you're like, I'm here to help.
Yeah, I'm here to melt your brain. Have fun.
Yeah.
God, so much so. Yep.
Well, I'm glad that you two enjoyed it and actually took enjoyment away from it instead of me, where I just took, like, homework away from it.
Which, I mean, homework is almost a good thing because it's that sense of there's more to the world. So there's, like, the homework helps with the idea that there's a world built within this world of Claws.
Yeah. So. Yeah, yeah. And since I'm such an Englishy guy, like, I've read many things that I just hate that I'd take away a lot from it because, you know, but...
Like, it's so awesome, but my brain melted.
Yeah. Yeah, basically.
It's
so.
Like over-processing.
Yay, Dan Mora. You're amazing.
Yeah, Dan don't Mora. Forget, thank you.
Well, that's the other part, is we can't forget Dan Mora and his awesome art.
Yeah.
Sorry for
kind of being a little mean to you, Grant Morrison, but Dan Mora, definitely, like, no criticism there. No, can't say anything.
All of his splash pages. Even remotely. I'm like, can I hang this in my house?
I know, right?
Yeah, every single character is, like, this perfect version of that character, you know, like, yeah.
God, mind melt.
Actually, my favorite part, I think, about this, and I'm flipping through it again, I totally forgot, but how instead of reindeer, he has wolves that pull his sleigh, too.
Yep. Yeah. Lily, his wolf. His main wolf.
Dude, what was the, you saw that, was the F thing a music note? Is that what that was supposed to be?
I think.
So at one point, it's like near the beginning, I believe, and he hears a sound, and then he says something, and it ends up and it comes out as a red F. That's what I was wondering, if it was supposed to be a music.
Well,
note.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
I see it now. I think that's actually a rune.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's for magics.
He might actually be speaking wolf at that point.
Okay. Oh.
Because it's only when he's talking to Lily that he does this.
Yeah. His wolf.
Yep.
Nice.
Yeah. Which is super cool. And, hey, they got archery, right? Like, he's actually... The bow is flexing and the string isn't just extending. And
intricate details.
Yep.
Intricate details that intricate Matt details. Always notices.
Yeah. Yay!
Okay.
Hooray.
Well...
That does it for our Christmas theme news episode. Christmas theme?
Batman theme?
Yeah.
Anyway,
well, with that
the
great
sigh. The Nightmare Before Christmas!
Hey, yeah, hey. It ties in. All right, well, with that being said, let's go ahead and say goodbye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.